welcome. You're listening to Carry On from the folks who bring you the hit podcast Baggage. I am Ryan Connor. This is Dr. Eric Shaw.
Hello.
And also Ryan Frank Esquire.
Hello, Ryan.
Adrian cannot be here today, for he is in another country. But this episode is some supplemental things that we couldn't fit into a regular episode, and Ryan Frank's going to be editing them, and I don't have to do that, which I really enjoy. Ryan, you want to get things started?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say, yeah, I'm going to do the editing, and I don't know what version of the intro we're going to use, but it's almost certainly not the one we just recorded.
I thought that was fun.
You were the consummate showman.
Always. You mean to do it like Ken Burns?
No, that's
in 2024. The Baggage Podcast was born.
Maybe, you know what? Maybe it is a little bit more in line with the feeling of what Carry On is going to be. It's just a little bit more laid back and casual. So maybe I keep it in. We'll see. So Eric and Ryan and Adrian and I were talking about what are we going to do with all the extra stuff we have. So we have the episodes of Baggage where we talk to guests and we get listener emails, we get questions afterwards, we get little anecdotal stories, and it doesn't really fit into the Baggage podcast. So what are we going to do with that? We came up with this idea, Carry On. Some in-between episodes. I don't even know if they're necessarily going to be shorter episodes, but some in-between episodes to kind of answer people's questions and fill in some of the things that maybe just didn't fit exactly into the regular episode. So got big feedback from the episode with my dad, part one with my dad. And there was some questions from actually a lot of members of the military with some of the background. And it wasn't really clear in the episode. First of all, a couple things. The sleeping dictionary aspect of it. My dad was telling that story in the context that he was not one of the people that was spending the night with the Vietnamese instructors. Just to be clear.
Was that email from your mom?
No, I don't think she was. I don't think she listened to the episode, but no, there are no half-sibling Vietnamese kids that I know of out there. People that are not members of the military might not know what the Tet Offensive is. Long story short, the North Vietnamese made a big push, and it was a major, major engagement for the Marine Corps, where it was some of the hardest fought battles. So when my dad was talking about that February 7th ambush, that was during the Tet Offensive. It was pretty important part of the Vietnam War for the Marine Corps.
Yeah, and Tet is Vietnamese New Year for anyone.
Right, exactly. Yeah. A number of people had asked about the trip to Vietnam that me and my dad had planned and why. I don't know if we mentioned in the podcast or not, but we're not going to do that. It's not going to get rescheduled because it really with my dad's 82 now, I think, and just that level of travel is not just very realistic. Honestly, back in 2020, I don't know how realistic it probably was. We were probably a little naive going into it. And then Ryan, you and I were talking, and what are your thoughts about an 82-year-old retired Marine that usually likes hamburgers and French fries, and that's his kind of diet? Going to Vietnam, what do you think the outcome of that would be?
Tell you what, if he ate the wrong thing, it's going to be a long life. You're going to carry it with you. So, you know, in a lot of countries, you can find these, you know, comfort foods and stuff. There, you're probably only going to find, you know, like Western type food like that in Saigon. And you're still going to have to look for it. So, yeah, I'll tell you, man, I was really enjoying the food. And then I slipped about a weekend. We're in Bac Lieu, which is like Mekong Delta, coming up from my brother's village. And we're on this weird ass bus, where you lay down. Everyone is laying down and you're stacked too high, like bunk beds on a fucking, it's the strangest. But it's made for people of Vietnamese heights. So I was a foot too tall for my bed. So my knees were like in my chest while lying down. And we stop at this rest stop, which I learned from my brother and sister-in-law. The drivers are paid by different rest stops to park there or to stop there. And
I need a better explanation of this, because in my mind, when I think rest stop, it's like Chesapeake House or something like that, up like the 95
Picture
corridor.
That, but in a at a country that's really only been industrialized for about 20 years. So Chesapeake House in about 1920,
nice,
maybe, or 1910, modern industrial. But anyway, so it's the same layout, right? Except it's just a roof. There's no front walls, but it's the same thing where you get food from here, here, or here. They had these banh mi. My brother wanted one because he was going to the airport, and then we were going off to Da Nang, and he was going back to the U.S. And I was like, "Yeah, I'll get one with you." And we get up to this cart. It looks like a, you know, the type of cart in New York where they'd sell like hot peanuts in Times Square, you know. And I'm about to get it, and my girlfriend Rachel was like, "Meat looks sketchy." And I asked my sister-in-law, she's like, "No, it looks fine." But here's the thing. My sister-in-law eats all the sketchy stuff, and it still doesn't really affect her. And she was trying to get us to eat the stuff the whole time. And I never caved. But this time I got the banh mi, and I ate half of it. My brother Oak ate one. And then I don't know if it was that. Also, could have been, I also got iced coffee there. Cafe Suada, that's what it's called. And the ice cubes could have been sketchy, but also I noticed after I ate and drank this, I went into the bathroom, and there's no soap in the bathroom, so this could have been from the hands of the person handling things. Then I got on the bus, my sister-in-law gave me a slice of jujube. I did not question where the fuck it came from on a bus. And I ate the skin as well.
What is jujube?
It's a little fruit. It's sort of, it's shaped similar to a pear, but it's sort of purplish burgundy or something. It's delicious, but should be washed properly. And as I'm swallowing it, I notice that the skin tastes like fish. And one of those three things made me violently ill for I'd say about 60 hours, and then residual issues for another 3, 4, 5 days. And then, yeah, thankfully Eric told me, make sure you start probiotics. So I got probiotics there. And when I came back to the US, I got the probiotics that a lot of GI doctors prescribe. And now I'm feeling good.
Yeah. Never travel without Zofran.
That's something that I wouldn't, looking back now, what the heck were we going to do? Because we went through a travel guide and all that, and it was going to be all local Vietnamese tour guide. And I actually pulled up the old emails from our travel itinerary, and we were going from, parts of it from Da Nang City, going to Quang Tri. This is near the DMZ, so basically middle part of the country. And there was like 9-hour trips where we're going to stop, obviously, and we were going to get
lunch.
You were
going to drive.
Well, we were going to have a guide. We were going to drive ourselves. Yeah. But they were, it was going to be driving.
Well, now that you used to have to drive everywhere. There are airports in every city now. So people just,
oh, really?
Just hop from city to city now.
Well, it was going to be, but the notes were like, and then, you know, we'll have lunch, but you pay for it, like local eateries, like local places. Because we're going to go in some of the middle of nowhere places. We're going to go to from Way City to Dong Ha. And just thinking back now, I hadn't even considered that. I hadn't even considered, and I'm pretty picky eater.
Yeah,
I bet you I would have been pretty miserable.
Well, dude, the other thing that my brother had to point out to me is like, only trust, it was like 2 or 3 brands of bottled water. Because he said some of these others, the tops will pop off easily, and they'll just refill with tap, and they can even snap it back on, so it looks like it's sealed. So it's Dasani, Aquafina was, they were like, try to get Aquafina, and then there was a Korean one, and I can't remember what the other one was, but yeah.
When I've done some medical missions to the Dominican and to Honduras, and particularly the Honduras one, where, you know, the first place we stayed was like super, super rustic. And they're like, don't drink the water, like be very, very careful. But by like the second and third one, they were like, oh yeah, it's all filtered, you'll be fine, blah, blah, blah. We weren't fine. And all of us, there was like five dudes staying in one room, and we all got dysentery. And it became this like joke of like who could get back to the toilet the first to just like destroy it and then line up to continue to just destroy the toilet. No.
How common is dysentery? Have I ever had dysentery? No, right? I wouldn't have had dysentery.
Does dysentery imply blood too?
It can. It's more of like a kind of a catch-all term for just like severe GI, particularly like diarrheal disease. But there's plenty of things that can do it, and like you know, E. coli, Salmonella, those are E. coli is probably the most common one where it's basically like poop got on your food.
Yeah, you took the Oregon Trail.
It's probably what happened then. Yeah. Probably what happened with that fucking rest up bathroom not having soap.
Yeah,
I mean soap. Yeah, man, that's the that epiphany where you're like, whoa.
The medical term is like fecal oral transmission.
Nope.
It sounds even worse.
The worst way to phrase it. Yeah.
So much worse. I mean, you may as well say ass to mouth.
you said it. God. I didn't. We were all thinking it.
But... Is that what doctors call it? You came down with some ass to mouth. Keep that, Ryan. Don't. Don't be soft.
I didn't say it. It's staying in.
And I want to tell a more positive story after that. We're talking about cultural eating and
the power of probiotics.
Yeah. the trip I did to the Dominican, it was neat. It was actually more of a teaching trip where we were teaching medical residents and then some local doctors. It was frustrating for me because I can't speak a lick of Spanish, and trying to teach these classes through a translator was just impossible. But we did the best we could. And, but what was really cool though, was some of the stuff, we had kind of a local handler that kind of like took me and this guy around. So this was, all put on by, not Doctors Without Borders, Doctors for Peace. And, they wanted to do some advertising and kind of like PR stuff with us. So they brought this, undergrad from UVA to kind of follow us around and document the whole thing. But it ended up like being me and him just like hanging out a lot. And so our handler was like, what do you guys want to do with your last day? You don't have any classes. You don't have anything. Like, what do you want to do? He's like, well, let's do something really Dominican. He's like, well, how about I take you to my housekeeper's plantation and they'll make you like a really traditional meal. And we're like, okay, that sounds cool. First off, the term plantation is really loosely used there. They lived in a cinder block shack with a dirt roof, and it was a subsistence farm. The kind of rule of thumb there is, if you are the guest, you provide the booze and the protein, and they'll provide all the vegetables and stuff. And so we went and we got a whole chicken, we got a bottle of rum, and we got some Presidente, and we went to this farm, and it was awesome. And like, even though me and the kid I was with couldn't speak Spanish, we kind of made it work with the family. And the big thing there was like the mom and the grandma would make dinner, and the sons and everyone would play dominoes. And grandpa would drink the rum, and that was the kind of order of things. When they use the whole, that's one of those places, like they use everything. And the rule of thumb was also like grandma gets the chicken feet and the gizzards. Don't touch those. Those are hers. And they just have this giant pot that's like 3 feet around that they cook everything in. And it was wonderful. It was one of the best meals I ever had. The only thing that was kind of quirky and a little bit uncomfortable was like they wouldn't eat until we had eaten. And I don't know if you've ever been in a situation like that. That is super uncomfortable.
Like you have to finish before they start.
Yeah. And so our handler's like, eat the food, eat it. And I was like, can they eat with us? I'd be more comfortable with it. And he's like, shut up and eat it. I was like, okay.
I've never heard that was Honduras.
No, this was the DR, but this is like way interior too. So this is like places like in the city we were staying in, it was Moca, which is like right in the interior. We were definitely the only white people there. Actually, it was really funny because like it was me and my attending. They were the only white person. The kid that came with us was Indian, and they all assumed that he could speak Spanish because he was brown too. And they start talking to him, and he's like, I don't know what you're saying. the DR was cool too. Like, it was just cultural stuff. Like they have these statues, these faceless kind of brown statues. And I was like, what is that? And he's like, well, in the DR, we don't consider ourselves really necessarily having a lot of race. We're just all kind of mixed together with all the locals and the slaves and the settlers and everyone, and we just consider ourselves Dominican. I was like, that's really cool.
Cool. I had chicken feet served to me in Vietnam too. I probably had 75 soups, and one of them I lifted the spoon in and a chicken foot came, and This is a boiled chicken foot. It looks like a chicken foot that is still on a chicken.
It does.
And I dropped the spoon.
I can't.
I dropped the spoon. I wouldn't even know how to eat it if I had to.
I think it's just crunchy. I didn't eat one, but
do you eat the bone or you just
yeah? Because you boil that long, it's just it's all just kind of mushy. But I think it's a little bit crunchier than the other stuff and has a little bit more. I mean, like you've had tripe before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a little chewier, a little bit more to it. I think it's the
not
same
doing
content,
it, man. It, not if it looks like a foot. You put it in a tureen, maybe I'll do it. I'm not eating something that
that's so far outside my comfort zone. Adrian's wife is Ukrainian. And we went over for the wedding to Ukraine before the war, years before the war, this was a while ago. And we stayed at a Western style hotel in Kyiv, and they had chicken Kyiv, and it was great. I think I had that for every single meal. And it wasn't, don't get me wrong, this is me. This is not a comment on Ukrainian cuisine. I'm so like typical American. Americana food and anything else is a little bit off. I've gotten a lot more adventurous more recently. So you put me in a place like Vietnam and it's feet. You want me to eat feet?
Nah,
I'm sorry.
Man.
I'm gonna drop some pounds.
Well, one of my good friends travels to Asia a lot for business and his stories about the stuff he's eaten over there is amazing. I mean, the one he showed me a video of was like, they had shrimp sushi. And when I say shrimp sushi, they brought these little fuckers out alive and cut their head off and just put them right onto the rice. So obviously you got to be careful with it because you can get disease from that. But that's usually from shrimp that's been sitting out for a while or dead shrimp where it's like these were most assuredly alive. And he was just sending me like all these videos of this thing like basically blinking at him like right before he ate it. The other one he ate was, I believe it was fried, but I'm not sure, but it was whale sperm. Which I also want to know, how does one get whale sperm? Like, is there a diver that's like a whale fluffer? Like, how does that work?
I mean, you'd have to have you'd have to probably jerk them off with like a car, right? Like, you need something enormous.
I don't know how you'd obtain that.
No, was it served as a soup?
We'll have to get Charlie on here sometime for he's got some great stories, but you'd have to ask
him. Was it a scramble?
It was actually a shooter.
I had a bunch of people ask about what unit my dad was in, because I don't know if he spelled it out. It was 3rd Battalion, 3rd Marines. He was in Kilo Company. The cool thing about that battalion, I had mentioned we were going to travel to Dong Ha. There is a very famous Marine from my dad's battalion, John Ripley. Ripley's Raiders, you Google that, or the bridge at Dong Ha.
Ripley's, believe it or not.
No,
it's not that guy. It's not the same guy.
No, but you want to talk about some Mission Impossible stuff where he's like hand over hand putting his satchel charges under a bridge under enemy fire. It's a wild, wild story. They wrote a book about it and stuff.
Very talented.
Yeah. So he was from my dad's battalion, former commandant for the Marine Corps. Krulak was my dad's battalion. Oliver North was from my dad's battalion. So there's a lot of,
North was in your dad's battalion. First of all, yeah, glossed over me calling him the talented Mr. Ripley, but it's fine.
Well, no, I think I gave it the appropriate attention it deserves.
Fuck. Well, I guess that's fair too. Oliver North was in your dad's battalion.
Yeah. I don't think they knew each other at the time, but, obviously a controversial figure, but at the time before the Reagan era, he actually had a pretty good reputation as a leader officer in the Marine Corps up until that point. Then he, involved in some stuff he maybe shouldn't have.
Isn't he a talking head now on like Fox News or one of those?
Is he really?
I got a great Oliver North story.
Oh, that's nuts.
So it's Fleet Week. Oh, my buddy's going to kill me for telling this. So it's Fleet Week in New York City. And anybody that doesn't know is once a year, Fleet Week in New York City is where the Navy basically takes over downtown Manhattan
and ruins every comedy show in the city.
Yeah, no, that was the West End that we came to visit you. Well, I'll tell that story too if you want.
I wasn't even talking about you guys. I was just talking about every show downtown that week is full of drunk sailors.
But the Marines go along. And what was so cool for us is that my squadron was a reserve squadron. And we had, I think we'd been activated for Iraq, but hadn't left yet. So there wasn't a lot of aviation units stateside. Everyone's in Iraq or Afghanistan. So they were like, we need helicopters. We got to have some helicopters up for Fleet Week. So what a good gig that was. That we sent like six helicopters up and a contingent from the squadron. And you're just hanging out in New York City. And you, if you're not in your hotel room or on the ship, I ended up having to stay on the ship in port downtown Manhattan. And if you're off the ship, you have to be in uniform. So you would go out in the city and people would be, you know, treat you pretty cool or whatever. And the Oliver North tie-in is we were doing a bunch of demos. So we'd go to like Central Park and Marines would rappel into Central Park in front of, you know, in front of a crowd or whatever. Big PR thing. Fox News was on the Iwo Jima reporting from the Iwo Jima. This was 2004, I think. And Oliver North was a commentator for Fox News. So they wanted him on the helicopter flying around doing some of this stuff. So my buddy, he got tasked with being the crew chief on the helicopter Oliver North was on. So they got the Fox camera crew with the cameras and everything back there taking video footage. And there's a clip where it goes over to my buddy and he's looking at the camera with his visor is up so you can see his eyes. He just looks dead-eyed into the camera, bloodshot eyes, puts the visor down and looks back out because it's Fleet Week. We had gone out the night before. No one's feeling too hot right then. You know, he's like trying to hold it in from throwing up and, you know, he's sitting next to Oliver North so he can't, you know, get sick on the plane. He's just got to look like he knows what he's doing. He was not drunk, but he was not feeling great.
That's very funny. I remember this, but I did not remember that part of it. I remember you that being shot, though. I need to add something. They don't actually ruin the shows. They just fill the shows. And now I'm thinking about it, they're better behaved than the regular audiences there.
Well, yeah,
so
you don't
take
get
everything
trouble.
Back.
Yeah, you don't want to get in trouble. Because yeah, I remember, because we went, I took me and my buddies. It was me, two of my Marine buddies, and a corpsman. So three guys in Marine uniforms and a sailor. And we go to the cellar, I think. You were doing a set at the cellar, I think. Some
Sounds
5 minutes
great.
At the cellar. Dave Attell was trying out some new stuff. So he was up there at the same time you had done a set. Or like right after you, right before you, something like that. And it was fun. I mean, it was pretty cool. Dave Attell sees a Navy guy sitting next to a couple of Marines in the back row. And he's like, what is going on? But, you know, we all took it in stride. And as we were leaving, we left the cellar and went next door because I think there was a bar right next door. As we're walking in, Dave Attell is walking out. And he goes, are you guys, were the guys from the show? We're like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, oh, I was going to leave, but all right, come on. So we go to the bar, and for like an hour or so, we're doing shots of Jägermeister and drinking Buds with Dave Attell. It was pretty cool. I think he got sober after that, but it was
yeah,
pretty fun.
Yeah. Now he does the same thing with iced coffee.
but it's pretty neat.
Yeah,
pretty
Dave cool. Attell is the best guy. He's very good to the people in the military.
Well, let's do this. Let's go to a listener email. This one's for Eric. We got an email from Al from New York City. I'll just read it. I really enjoyed Eric's story arc and wanted to ask a follow-up to when he described realizing he needed to leave emergency medicine. Is there anything like a tension or rivalry between doctors who work in more emergency situations and doctors who work more in regular or preventive care?
I've never heard of anyone bring up a rivalry. That's an interesting question. Not typically. Everyone kind of sticks to their own lane, to be honest. I mean, the only times we'll see kind of conflict per se is if, like, you know, evaluations are different from what we might do, or you know, sometimes in the ER, people describe as like practicing defensively, and they'll do kind of over the top workups, whereas a primary care physician would be like, well, we could probably have, you know, waited to do something more invasive. But as far as rivalries, not really. I think that only kind of happens more with like fields that may overlap, to some of the surgery subspecialties, or maybe a you know, family doc that's like encroaching on what, you know, an endocrinologist or like a subspecialist of some sort might do. I saw one of my infectious disease attendings in residency absolutely just like destroy another guy for trying to manage like one of his HIV patients. But like otherwise, pretty collegial, to be honest.
Yeah, I've heard of it was someone in my family. I can't remember if it was my brother or my mom because they both had cervical spine surgeries. But a neurologist and a spine specialist had competing ideas for them for what to do. So is that a world where?
Yeah, that I mean, that
like could, there's a little crossover, and you could see that happening.
That could definitely happen. And it's interesting that you say like a spine surgeon. That tends to be one of the a little bit more, I don't want to say contentious, is not the right way to put it. Let me put it differently. So if you took your kid with an ear infection to 10 different pediatricians, you should basically get the same answer 10 different times, and it may be a little bit of a different style or a different feel, but like the medicine is pretty standardized there. Where some of the surgical stuff, it is still based on like evidence-based medicine, but mm-hmm. there's definitely varying opinions of like what would be the best course of action for this person. And some doctors tend to be a little bit more reactive than others. Like I tend to be more of a less is more type guy where like I try to not do things if we don't have to. Whereas some, you know, the joke with surgeons, like a chance to cut is a chance to cure. So I mean, if you go to them, that is kind of what they're usually going to talk about. But some orthopedists will be like, well, let's try physical therapy first and let's do this course of action first. So with surgery stuff, you may get different answers by going to different doctors. On a funnier side, when I was in residency, some of the most contentious stuff I ever saw was in the PICU. And we had a cardiothoracic surgeon that would do repairs on these little babies with congenital heart defects, which were frequently days old. And he was in there like doing surgery on them. Or some of the older kids where they'd done previous corrective surgeries, but needed to go back and like revise it or do other stuff. But we had him, we had the cardiologist who were at our hospital were kind of punching above their weight class and like the big swinging dicks of the hospital. And then there was the PICU or ICU doctors. And on rounds, the residents, particularly for the PICU stuff, it was very overwhelming for us. It was a lot harder, more complicated medicine than we'd ever practiced. And so we tended to act as more like reporters than actual managers, whereas on the floor, we were managing patients. These kids were just way above our pay grade. And so it would oftentimes come into these like little pissing matches between all three of those sets of doctors, and the residents were stuck in the middle, and we'd sit there on rounds and everyone would be yelling at each other. And we're just, shit, mommy and daddy are fighting. Like, what do we do? And usually they would come to a conclusion, and then we'd be like, oh, okay, we'll make that happen.
Who were the three again?
A cardiothoracic surgeon, a cardiologist, and an intensivist.
Gotcha. What's an intensivist?
Like an ICU doctor.
Just any general ICU doctor?
Yeah. So like, you know, peds has the PICU, the pediatric ICU, you know, adults have the ICU, but there's also like the cardiac ICU. There's a couple different versions of them. Like if you go to the hospital, but yeah, that was more like interdepartmental stuff. And depending on what hospital system you go to, interdepartmental stuff can get really nasty. And that's more with like money and politics than anything medical. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would avoid, if I never went into a hospital, if I never worked in a hospital again, I would die happy, and I would never work in like an academic center again. It attracts interesting people.
I was hoping for something more like it's the Sharks versus the Jets, and you guys are just like in the parking lot.
No, it's same team, same jersey for the most part. Like it's usually pretty collegial, to be honest.
I was gonna say, can I just say that just piggyback on what Eric said about the spine surgeon thing? Just because this could help someone. I had severe back pain for, I don't know, it was 3-4 years, all lumbar and sacrum. And my primary care doctor was just giving me shots, just Toradol and cortisone all the time. And I'm like, I don't think this is the right thing, you know. And then finally, I get a referral to a spinal surgeon. My primary care doctor thought they were gonna have to do a fusion. I go to this specialist, and he's like, you know, at the time I think I was 39 or maybe 40, and he's like, there is no scenario where I want to operate on your spine at your age. We need to figure out a type of PT that will work for you. And anyway, that really saved me, because then once I found the PT that worked for me, like I feel like, you know, feel like I'm 20. So anyway, if someone says they want to cut your back open in your 30s or 40s, get some opinions. Go to a good physical therapist. Figure it out.
I'm going to paraphrase the second part. The next part of this email is that is there a stigma or an attitude from ER doctors to general practitioners of that the real stuff, you know, like the line doctors are the ones that are in the ER, see the most traumatic stuff. Is there that kind of?
No, not at all.
Machismo?
No, no. Again, everyone kind of picks their lane in medicine, and everyone, I think, for the most part, respects what other people do. And a lot of it is like, I know pediatrics is a little bit of a stigmatizing one. You either like kids or you don't. And I think a lot of people, as they're going through medical school and even, you know, well-seasoned doctors, the smaller the patient, the more intimidating they are because they don't have a lot of experience with it. Like a newborn infant is like terrifying. And so with pediatrics, that is one where no ER doc would ever want to do basic pediatrics. So for them, they're impressed like what I'm doing. They're like, Jesus Christ, I can never do with that. Never do that. And then same thing, like I would never want to do trauma surgery. It's, you know, we all kind of respect each other for the fields that we go into. My interactions with other doctors and even going through medical school, there was never a sense of just like, well, what I'm doing is better or what I'm doing is more badass. I'm sure those guys.
Are there any pediatricians who hate kids?
Probably. They order extra shots. I don't know.
I know a guy, I won't name him, but he spent a lot of money and a lot of time going through dental school and he hates his life. But that's it.
Would you? That is a funny
huge
one.
Hands.
Too.
Huge hands.
With dental stuff, I'll have patients ask me all the time, like dental questions. And I'm like, look, they're in medical school. They teach us that humans have teeth. And that is literally the extent of it. And God bless like dentists. They have been able to maintain that monopoly on that part of the body because doctors have a way of creeping into like other fields that they probably shouldn't be doing. Or particularly other subspecialties, like trying to make like, you know, side hustle or money. Whereas like, that's when they're like the dentists have really circled the wagons and been able to hold on to that.
I have a question. You went through 3 episodes of your migration from everything you experienced and decided to settle where you were. Have you run into other doctors that did the same thing? Have you given advice to other people and like said to them, you might want to think about getting out of it if you're having that much trouble? Have you run into anybody else going through the same experience as you, I guess is the way to say it.
No, but I mean, honestly, I don't hang out with many doctors outside of work. And now that said, the doctors I have talked to, I have come to the conclusion that my experiences were substantially rougher than the majority, whether that was just bad luck or however it worked. And like the paramedic stuff was its own thing that I did that to myself. I do teach students. I precept DO students through for Rocky Vista right now. And since we've been doing this, I have been like encouraging them to listen to this show. And these were stories I've been telling to a lot of the students anyways. But I just recently had 2 back-to-back ones that wanted to be surgeons. And one of them said she wanted to be a trauma surgeon. And I'm just like, all right, that's cool. Like, I hope you're up for that. Yeah, her philosophy seemed more in line with kind of like yours, Ryan. And like, I don't think she had the shitty foundation that I did. And she was just like, yeah, if I can be there to help, I want to do it. And I was like, okay. But it, you know, just be warned, it does start to grate on you. It does wear you down after a while.
Got an email here from listener Ryan from Los Angeles. That's for Eric. As a doctor, when a dentist refers to themselves as doctor, do you kind of go,
No.
Sort of?
No, they go through a lot.
You never like, you don't want to call them, you know, dentist Smith instead of Dr. Smith?
Their training is on par with us. Like,
is it really?
Yeah. Like dental school is no joke. Like that is definitely graduate level, you know, physiology, pathology, pharmacology, and then obviously like
it's
more
such a small area though.
Yeah, but they also do. I think they do some version of a residency as well, where they have some post school training to like hone up because their stuff is. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're
flossing, right? They would have to.
I mean, they are. Right. Most of them are. We'll call them almost like a surgery subspecialty. And then there's like OMF guys too, that do kind of like, you know, facial surgery in addition to the dental stuff and reconstructive surgery. So no, they're well-trained.
I thought those were different guys. I did not know that was the dentist.
I think you can go. I think there's different routes that you can get to that. I think you can go the medical route or the dental route, and then do like additional fellowships and training afterwards. Don't quote me on that one. I never really looked into that, but those guys usually also work kind of hand in hand.
I always thought they were like sort of doctors.
No.
I mean, emailer Ryan from Los Angeles thought they were just sort of doctors, not me. I'm just, you know, reading an email.
Well, guys, thanks for listening to the inaugural episode of Carry On. We are still working on this. It can be whatever you guys want it to be. So keep sending the emails and let us know what you want to hear. And we'll answer those questions in the podcast.
Well, thank you for listening to the Baggage Podcast. If you liked our show, please check us out online at thebaggagepodcast.com. Please rate, follow us, and share on all the major podcast platforms. Also, if you have stories that you'd like to share from us or comments that you'd like to leave, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at thebaggagepodcast@gmail.com. That is the easiest way to get in touch with us. Or leave a post on Facebook as well. Those are all good ways to get in touch with us. So we look forward to talking with you next time. We'll